I only want to go to a comic fest if I know people who will be there. Is my thing. Recently, there was a comic fest that I almost didn't go to because someone I have a crush on wasn't going to be there. So I was like, "What's the point? Why would I even want to go?"
Hello, and welcome to Drawing a Dialogue Presents. My name is Kathy G. Johnson.
And I'm Remus Jackson.
We are cartoonists, scholars, and educators. On regular episodes of Drawing a Dialogue, we put comics into historical, theoretical, and educational contexts. On these special Dad Presents episodes, we share interviews with artists, scholars, and community members. I teach K-12 students in schools in addition to alternative educational settings, and I'm a thesis professor in the Visual Narrative MFA program at Boston University. I have 3 graphic novels out in addition to self-published works. My newest project is a webcomic titled Charger County. You can read it at chargercounty.com. I have a master's degree in art education.
And I am a PhD candidate in the University of Florida's English program, and I have a master's degree in English also from UF. My research focuses on trans embodiment and world-making strategies in comics and zines. I'm also an editor and contributor to the Hyperreal Film Club Journal, which you can find over at hyperrealfilm.club. So we are joined today by Higu Rose, and Higu is an illustrator, cartoonist, ethnographer, and local terror living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Based in fiction and autobiography, Higu's work focuses on experiences of being Black, queer, trans, and a little bonkers. Higu's narratives are a constant endeavor to understand the self and society with a snarling desire to love and live. Their autographical graphic novel, Titty Top Boob Slash, was called the best trans comic of 2017. Higu is currently working on Yin City, a graphic novel series about a group of queer and trans people of color. Higu works in various mediums such as paint, ink, fiber, and printmaking. One time they made Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel wait 5 minutes for an 8-ounce cup of coffee. Love that. Great bio. So if you're ready.
Thank you. I've never heard it out yet.
If you're ready, you can go ahead and just hop right into it, right?
Let's do it.
Great. So my first question for you is, how did you get into comics?
So my dad wrote a comic in the 80s. When he was like, my dad was like considered radical in the 80s. So he wrote this like sci-fi one-issue comic that was floating around the house when I was growing up, which I read as like a 10-year-old and did not understand anything about it, but it was a comic, so I read it. And so I was introduced to them kind of young. My family had a lot of the how to draw such and such books lying around, which eventually became how to draw manga, but for the most part were like how to draw dogs, how to draw cartoon dogs, how to draw bugs. Was not good at the bug ones. I read a lot of the Sunday comics, or I just looked at the Sunday comics. And then, I'm trying to think. Oh, I started jumping from like the Sunday comics. At some point, I started drawing comics for my brother every single year for his birthday. I have no idea if they've survived. They're all like pretty silly and self-referential. I would love to go back and read them one day. And then in sixth grade, I read Mouse because it was just in, my brother was several grades ahead of me and he was reading it for school, which meant that I, of course, read it. And I, this is kind of weird in retrospect when I thought about it. I would trace certain panels from it, like very, very simple panels from it and not the like horrific ones. But yeah. And then from Mouse, one of my friends on Neopets introduced me to shoujo manga. And I just got really into it from there. Shoujo manga, specifically Kamikaze Kaitojin and the Pokemon manga where the main character was Red. Was Red?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was Red. Yeah. And then the other early manga I read was called Japan Inc., which is about the economy in Japan in the 1980s, which was another one that I read, and I was like, clearly I know what this guy is talking about. But mostly I was like, wow, manga is so neat. I like these graphs. So I started drawing comics from doing these birthday comics for my brother.
You're also in that culture of like manga that we all grew up in.
But I'll never escape, gladly, no. Lovingly.
Cool. I guess following up on that, now that I'm thinking about it, what was the point? Was there a point for you where you felt like, oh, this is what I just want to do sort of as a career, like as my work or whatever? Or is that kind of, was that always kind of?
Well, I don't ever want to commit myself to something called a career.
Yeah.
Because I hate work and the concept of work. So I didn't really consider myself like a for real artist until I was graduated college. And I just started like, I don't know what to do with myself, so I guess I'll just draw a lot. And that was around when I was like, oh yeah, I'm an artist. And then a couple years later, I was like, oh yeah, I'm a graphic novelist now. But I have never considered it as like a viable career, not because I don't think I could do it, I guess. Well, actually, I don't think I could do it, but also I just don't want to. Because there are very few things that I like want to do consistently for a source of income.
Mm-hmm. That would sort of like take the joy out of it, or.
Yeah, I also cycle through things that I'm interested in. So I might draw comics for like 6 months of the year and then not draw comics for another 6 months. And that's not really a good way to sustain yourself.
Sure, that's fair.
So I have a day job that is not related to comics.
Coolio. Great. And then kind of like thinking about your work some more, my second question for you is kind of a two-parter, so I can give it to you separately if you'd like, but the first part of it is how do you define trans representation? And then maybe let's start there, and then we can move into the other half.
Okay, this is one of the ones that I took notes for. Because I kind of don't really know how to define it so much as I know what I am, like, interested in seeing as trans representation. So, like, for me, the first stage of what I actually care about in terms of representation is the actual people making things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I see a trans character in media that is like well written, I'm like, that's really cool, that's awesome. But then if I find out that there was no trans person involved in the creation, I'm kind of like, oh, that's cool, like that's not as interesting to me. As a Black person, I feel the same about Black characters,
right?
Especially if we're looking at, you know, like there's Marvel comics where they're like, we put one in, it's there now, and I'm like, I don't care. I don't read superhero comics anyway, so that's not the best example. But, and even if it's like trans people being represented in the creation of something, if they make something that is not even explicitly about trans characters or even involving characters, I think the fact that there is like a trans person in the writing room or whatever informs the tone of the work. And that's another thing that is just more interesting to me, like as a writer and as a consumer of media.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then thinking about that then, how do you sort of situate your own work in relationship to trans representation?
I do it.
Listen, yeah, I mean...
Like, yeah, I make comics and I am a trans and queer person. So it's like, I got the first step down. And then, you know, on top of that, all of my characters are, like, the majority of the characters are trans. So I've got that checkbox. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're someone who doesn't really mind if people... use that, like, describe your work as, like, trans representation, because that's what it is, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Cool.
This was actually a really interesting question, because I was telling my coworkers about it, and I just, like, read the question out loud, or, like, where I paraphrased it very poorly, where I was like, what do I think is the importance of trans representation, or something, and as I work with teens, and one of our students was nearby, and they just yelled, "It's good!" You know what? It's good. It's a good thing to have.
That's really cute. I love that. And kind of, I mean, like, in a good example of this, right, is Yin City, which I definitely want us to talk about. I love Yin City. I think it's so cool. You describe it on your website as an ongoing fictionalized archive of localized QTPOC histories. And I was wondering if you could unpack what that means for us.
Okay. That comes out of, I applied for a grant so that I could do Yin City. And so it's extremely grant speak.
Yeah.
And also my friend who applies for lots of grants wrote it for me. I'm trying to think of how far back to go in explaining this.
As far back as you want. We've got time.
So I guess the background context for Yin City is that a long time ago it started as just focusing on one character who is still a major character. And it was taking me forever to draw it until I realized I didn't feel like drawing it. So I changed it to being about a group of characters. And at the time I was living, so Yin City is based in Pittsburgh secretly, but I won't admit it out loud. And I was not living in Pittsburgh when I started drawing it as what it is now. And so it became sort of like a mocking love letter to Pittsburgh. And because of that, it was based really heavily on my personal experiences and the stories that my friends had told me. And after a while, I was kind of conflicted about that, I guess, especially when I started applying for grants and wanted them to give me money, because I was like, they're not going to give me money to be like, here's my comic about these characters who are all just me. So I thought, oh, two ways to handle the situation of like expanding the narrative and also getting a grant is I'll make this into a project where I interview other queer and trans people of color in the city. So it became, I didn't know this word until I was telling this project, talking to my friend about this project, and he was like, oh, so you're talking about an ethnography. I was like, I don't know what that is. But should I explain what an ethnography is? Or
yeah, I'd love to hear your explanation of it.
It's going to be a very basic explanation because I don't really know how to do it. But they already gave me the money to do it, so what are they gonna? They can't take it back. So I Googled what is ethnography, and it is the study of people in their own environment through the use of methods such as participant observation and face-to-face interviews. And then you take the interviews, which is what I did, the face-to-face interviews, and you like analyze them by looking for like common language or like cultural references and experiences, and you see how they might be thematically connected across the interviews. And then you use that, well, I'm using that to inform the writing of Yin City in terms of like how the characters like navigate their relationships with each other and how they like develop as characters and maybe the different spaces they inhabit. There was something else. And ethnography is very much like, as opposed to being like a survey where it's like, rate your experience on public transit from a scale of 1 to 10 or something. It's very much one of the questions I would ask is like, tell me a story about a time you were comfortable in a queer like setting or something. And so it's very much like, tell me stories rather than like data mm-hmm. analysis exactly, I guess. And so I am not setting out to draw the stories that people told me. If people mention, like, oh yeah, I went to that one gay bar and it really sucked. Like if a bunch of people say that, I'm like, I'm probably going to reference the gay bar that sucks.
Right.
Yeah. Localized history. So, and Yin City accidentally is kind of starts and is set in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of like the ongoing history part of it, although it's an alternative history, because smartphones were never invented. Yeah. Yeah.
Why did you decide not to include smartphones?
They're not cute. They're not cute and they're really boring to draw. And I have for a long time been really fascinated by, I can't remember, I think it's called the Galapagos effect, which is how in Japan, the development of technology was like very specific to Japan. So their flip phones could do a lot of the things that early smartphones could do, but like way before.
Mm-hmm.
I'd always thought that that was really neat. And also the phones are just like cute.
Yeah. They're much cuter. That's fun. I think what you're doing with Yin City is really interesting. I'm gonna kind of like, how has that interview process been? Like, what is the kind of responses you get from people when you do those interviews?
I like doing the interviews more than I like drawing the comic.
Yeah.
So if I could do more interviews and then like just keep putting off the comic, I totally would. I honestly have thought about doing a zine or something about doing the interviews instead of doing the actual Yin City part. Maybe that can happen later. But yeah, they were really fun. For the most part, I was really bad at it at first. And then once I got to be good at it, I was like, oh, this is awesome. So most of the people, I put out a call on Instagram. I made a poster and I was going to like throw it around town, but I started by putting it on Instagram. And it specifically asked for queer and trans people of color with a focus on Black and Indigenous folks of trans masculine and non-binary leanings, which was a nightmare to figure out that language because I had to face myself and be like, what the hell does that even mean? So most of the people I interviewed, I think all except one person were Black.
Mm-hmm.
And
can I ask a question?
Yeah.
How many people did you interview?
I was supposed to interview 10, but I did 12 or 13 interviews. Some of them were follow-ups, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to do more.
Yeah. Interviewing people is fun.
It's so good. Yeah. Yeah, there were certain just, like, things that popped up that I wasn't expecting. Like, so many people were asexual,
mm-hmm.
and so many people were self-diagnosed ADHD or autism. And there were so many non-binary people, which was really, like, very cool. I don't know. I wasn't Well, one thing that ended up happening was I really wanted to interview people who were around my age because they would have been in the city in like maybe the same scene as me. But because I posted it on Instagram, I got a lot of people who were like 27 or like, I think the youngest person I interviewed might have been 23, maybe.
Gotcha.
And so I think that age gap in certain ways had to do with there being far more non-binary people than I anticipated. But I think it also is kind of related to the way Black people sometimes conceptualize like gender and identity. I think I only interviewed one binary trans man. Yeah.
Could I ask you to talk a little bit more about what you said about how Black people conceptualize gender and identity?
Oh, can you? Yeah. Yes. How do I explain this? I think that because of the way like colonial gender roles have been imposed on Black folk for so long, when we like try to kind of like, oh gosh, I don't know what I'm about to say. we're all on a ride right now. When we kind of like deconstruct that, it allows for like a lot of different fluidity and like interpretations of what like masculine and feminine might mean. I mean, there's also like in the Black community, there's such a like, there is still like a very kind of very toxic culture of like hard masculinity and at times hard femininity. But I think that queer Black folk really like play with that a lot in whatever way they're floating back and forth. So some of the people I interviewed were like, yeah, I use they pronouns, but like I don't really define masculinity in the way that a lot of like in the way that masculinity has been like introduced to me through my life and the way that like masculinity is like supposed to be applied to like Black men or whatever. But I am still a masculine person.
Right.
Which was neat. It was very cool.
Yeah. Kind of on the same, we talked about this a little bit in terms of how you're analyzing the interviews and stuff, but how did you actually like approach depicting those queer trans people of color communities and experiences in Yin City or like more broadly, like from the interview process to like synthesizing it on the page?
I am actually still in the process of doing that.
Okay.
Because the timeline that I kind of accidentally imposed on myself to coincide with the grant was I was like, yeah, I'm going to do these interviews and I'm going to draw an entire volume of a comic. I'm going to do it in 1 year.
Oh no.
And then I got 6 months into it and I was like, please give me an extension, please, please, please. And when the deadline rolls around again, I'm going to be like, please. But
when you say a volume, how many pages were you like kind of aiming for?
I think the last volume was so 36 multiplied by 3 plus 42, maybe.
So like around 150?
150. Yeah. You wow, Remus.
Cool. I'm so bad at math. That was a lucky guess.
It's exactly 150. I pulled up the calculator.
You could have said anything and I would have believed you. I was going to say, I don't know, 118? Oh, that's so many pages.
That's a lot of pages.
So many pages.
That's a lot of pages to draw. So you
I just finished 170 of this book and I was looking at it and I was like, once what? I don't even conceive of drawing that. Anyway, sorry, continue.
No, I was just gonna add like,
oh
so you, part of Yin City was drawn before the grant, the interviews, right? Because we have the first volume.
Yeah, right.
Interesting.
And I was really cocky about it because I had drawn 36 plus I don't know 42 over the span of lockdown. So I was like, ah, I can do it. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. And then, you know, I went to draw it and I had a job. I had to go to work. But I think what is actually going to happen is I kind of vaguely had an outline for certain aspects of Volume 2 that certain things about it changed because of the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
But what is really going to happen is I think after I finish Volume 2, I'm probably just going to take a break and do the proper ethnography analysis for like however long that takes. And then kind of reassess the situation.
Gotcha. Cool.
Can I ask what the grant is that you got? And like, what's the timeline for getting the grant and starting the project?
What the name of it is? Or
yeah, if you want to share.
Yeah, it's the Advancing Black Arts in Pittsburgh grant. Oh, cool. I got it in 2022. Yes, because the first time I applied for it, I did a really bad job in 2021. 2022, I did a good job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Cool. So when you're designing your characters, because Yin City has like a big ensemble cast, so we can, again, this can be like Yin City or more generally, what like sorts of things are you thinking about, or like how do you come up with your character designs?
It's always the hair first. Always starts with the hair, because hair is like, I love drawing it, but it's also really hard to draw.
Mm-hmm.
Like the more hair there is, the easier it is for me to draw it. So if the hair is the thing that I'm going to be focusing and like stressing over the most, that's where I'm going to start. Honestly, the character designs come from like pretty much anywhere as a jumping point. So there are characters in Yin City who are based off of dolls that I collect. I got a new doll in the mail yesterday, and that they're probably going to be a character in Yin City.
I did see your Instagram post, and I was like, that's a really nice doll.
God, I love him so much.
Irrelevant but to this particular thing. I also love ball-pointed dolls. So, yeah.
It seems completely relevant. How dare you say that's irrelevant?
I meant, like, my personal taste is irrelevant, but, you know.
I was going to ask what kind of doll. Ball-jointed doll makes sense to me, yeah.
Yeah, ball-jointed doll. I think at least one of them came from a stuffed animal.
So cute.
One character who's, like, a fan favorite, Nabokov, was inspired by a girl who I was not following on Tumblr, but every now and then I would check her blog and I was like, oh, she's so cool looking. I always put a lot more effort into drawing the people of color, which is so it takes me a while to design the characters because I'm very much like, okay, like what ethnic background do I want them to have? How do I draw people from that background or ethnicity or whatever? What are like common, this is so, I'm like, oh my God, am I getting into race science? But it's like, what are like common like features, like whether it's like the body or whatever. I will say that coming out of like a manga background, one thing that I really over the years have like struggled with and tried to like address as much like as aggressively as possible is like body diversity.
Hmm.
So I really want like the four main leads of Yin City are supposed to have different body types, and it's something that I'm still like very critical of myself as to whether or not I like pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like there's one of the main leads is just like going to gain weight over the series kind of as I get better at that.
Good for them.
That's what happens. I don't know.
That's how it works. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know,
I'm like, no, it's realism. It's not because of my skill set. and there are little things that I like to put in, that I don't think anyone notices. So I'm going to talk about it so that people
yes,
will notice
please.
From now on. Like, for drawing trans mask characters, they always have a lower eyelash line. And then for drawing trans femme characters, they always have connected like eyeliner or something. Not like eyeliner, but like connected eye situations going on here. And like, I will think about if a mask character has like top surgery, but am I going to draw it? Not unless it's like, probably, I don't know. I just never think about it. But like, if I'm drawing porn or something, then yes, that's important. Mm. But in the comic, I'm like, I don't know if it'll come up or not. Yeah. And I also, I'm like very obsessed with the fashion. And like making sure that the different characters, I want them to have very specific, like unique to them fashion. Which sometimes is pulled from the way my friends dress, and sometimes is like something I see on Pinterest or something. Yeah. White people are really hard for me to design. So like, I always go to my roommate and I'm like, I need this white person to kind of look like a combination of this person and this person from these stock images. Can you do this for me? This is the character's vibe. And he's like, I got you.
Is he an artist as well?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
There's one of the lead characters, Shelly, is just like literally Damon Albarn. But I didn't know how to draw Damon Albarn. So I went to my roommate and I was like, can you draw Damon Albarn for me? But it's funny because they're really easy to draw, though.
Like once you have the design established?
Yeah, they're really easy to draw because like my shorthand for white people is often, and I got this from anime, is that they'll have like droopy eyes and like heavy lids. And a lot of times I default to them having like a swoop nose.
That's what they say in Cosmopolitan. Swoop nose.
Swoop nose. Yeah. The famous Anglo swoop nose. I am okay. I would love to know why, what the bottom eyelash line for trans masks.
I think I can't remember the exact context of this conversation. I think I was with a friend and I think we were watching like some show or movie and we were like drinking or something. And my friend, and there was someone on the screen in whatever we were watching. And my friend goes, I think that guy's trans. He has beautiful eyelashes. And it will just never leave me. So I was like, I'm putting it in Yin City.
That's fair. That's real. All right. So we're going to switch gears a little bit. I know you've talked about this in previous interviews, so forgive me for asking about it again. But how would you describe the politics of your own work, sort of broadly speaking?
This question made me laugh because I recently did an interview with our local art periodical, Petrichor.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me this question and I was not expecting it. And I just totally beefed it. I was like, oh, I don't know. And then I said, I truly said, and I can't believe I said this, I don't consider myself a political person. And then I went home and I was like,
what?
I can only imagine my friends read it and were just like, what is this? But were too kind to say anything to me about it. But I actually don't know truly how to answer. Could you ask the question again?
Yeah. So it's, would you describe the politics of your own work sort of broadly? And you, that doesn't have to be as like granular as like it's anarchist or leftist or whatever. It can just like be however you would define, you know, politics.
Okay. I like that you used anarchist and leftist as examples because I think that that is where I kind of like follow along sort of, and I feel like maybe that shows up, but I don't know. Maybe not. I feel like I don't. I think when I told the other interviewer that I don't consider myself a like overtly political person in terms of my work, I think I meant that it's not like I don't actively think about my work as like purposefully being political.
Mm.
I think that queer people and like people of color and like I'm focusing on those two because that's who I am. Our work is like inherently politicized just because we are like seen as just like the other in society. And so anything we do, people are going to look at through like a political lens of like kind of like, oh, but what does that mean? Why are you doing that kind of thing? What is that about? Is that because you're queer? Is that because you're like black or brown? Whatever.
Right.
So I've kind of just accepted the fact that like, whatever, my work is probably going to be, is like inherently political in that sense. But in terms of like politics,
I just keep picturing like you putting Joe Biden in his city or something, the way you're talking about it.
Okay, but I flipped through volume one, and there's this part. I really like graffiti. Pittsburgh's graffiti culture for so long has been like majority tagging because Pittsburgh has a really aggressive anti-graffiti like task force. So a lot of it is like tagging. And in one of the panels in volume one, it just says, Bill Peduto, eat my ass, which is a real piece of graffiti talking about former mayor of Pittsburgh, Bill Peduto.
So, you know, that I mean, that's political. But no, but really, you just talking about the graffiti of Pittsburgh. See, that's political, right?
Yeah.
And I think from my perspective, the reason I was thinking about this too is I think both in like Yin City and also like through this conversation, we've talked so much about like community and the way that you have really enmeshed yourself in this very like your local community and like wanting to like understand and be connected with other like particularly like queer trans people of color, particularly like black queer people right around you. And I think that is also like a sort of like political framing, not like, again, not necessarily in the like American representative politics, but you know, like
yeah, I'm gonna take a reader response poll on who they think votes and who they think doesn't vote in Yin City.
I was just thinking, I was like, please give us the political affiliations for every character.
Yeah, we're gonna need a breakdown the voter registration the last time.
Who is Marxist?
I feel like at least one of the trans girls has to be a tanky.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just realistically speaking.
I think the character Sage probably is not even registered to vote. And then probably all of the other like main characters are like socialist towards radical. Mm-hmm. Radical socialism. I'm sure most of them have anarchist leanings. Yeah, definitely. That's just who I spend time with more than anything else.
Absolutely. If you're reflecting back what you see around you, right? Like,
right.
That's going to be what comes up.
Right.
And so now we're going to switch gears a tiny bit again. sort of talk about your relationship to Comic and Zine Fest, because that's something that I've been interested in all of these, right? So like, what is your relationship to Comic/Zine Fest? Like, how do you feel about them?
So I entered them through anime cons. I started doing anime cons like towards the end of college and after, like immediately after anime cons. After college, and they are so big and stressful. I don't like them.
did you ever table, or were you just like attending?
Oh, yeah, I only ever went to them to table. So I was in the like indie artist alley, and I think at the time when I was like starting out, I was one of the few people who had like sort of like narrative, autobio, and like fiction zines and comics, which some people at anime cons were like into and some people weren't. In like 2015, someone local maybe said like, well, why don't you ever go to zine fairs? And I was like, what the hell is a zine fair? So I kind of like slowly got into Comic Fests and was like flabbergasted because they were so like there were not, like, at anime cons, people basically build, like, billboards on their tables of fan art. And so that was kind of what I was expecting. And then I got to, like, a zine fest, and then, like, I went to, like, Cake or something, and I was like, oh my god, I can see the ceiling. This is great.
Yeah, Kathy and I have, like, talked about that before, of the, like, I think we're talking about it with Sunmi, maybe, the, like, culture is so radically different.
So different. It's
and
so
you can
wild.
Tell, when you're at a comic show, you can tell who has a background in anime cons.
That's so true! I'm always like, I don't want anyone to know.
I have a question. How did you start making zines if you didn't know that zine fests were a thing? Like, how did you first find a zine? I feel like a lot of zinesters think they invent zines. Like, when they're a kid, like, they were like, I've invented a zine. And then,
I mean, I was already around my dad's self-published thing. So I guess I was already kind of like, I wonder if he even...
Oh, so your dad's comic was... a self-published, was it a zine, or like, was it, oh cool,
no, it was a comic, it was a comic,
but not, but like, he stapled it himself.
I think probably what happened was it was like one of those traditional old school zine things where like one of your friends works at an office with a copy machine that has the automatic stapler.
Classic. Love
so you
that.
Grew up with it. You grew up with self-publishing as like a possibility. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I think I got into zines proper because when I was in grad school, I started drawing this journal comic that got moderately popular. And I think people asked me about whether they could buy it in print. And I was like, God, no, I don't know how to do that. I don't really know. I don't know how I made the jump to zines. That's such an interesting question. I have no answer.
Sometimes it just happens.
All of my like early stuff was autobio, and then I slowly shifted into doing the fiction stuff. I used to be convinced that you needed to have something new for every single show that you went to.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's hard to break out of that mentality.
A lot of the shows ask... Are you in the applications? They ask, are you debuting something? But the thing is that comics take forever. It's like realizing it's like, I can't have a new, it's not possible. It's just not possible.
I did it for like maybe 2 years, and then I realized it was making me crazy to have something new because I was putting out like at least five comics a year. I was suffering. That's why ten self-published pieces because I was like unmedicated at 3 a.m. drawing comics.
Right. And they're all, I mean, the show, a lot of the shows are clustered in the same span of 5 months too. So it's like, oof.
The comic fests. I only want to go to a comic fest if I know people who will be there. Is my thing. Recently there was a comic fest that I almost didn't go to because someone I have a crush on wasn't gonna be there, so I was like, what's the point? Why would I even want to go? Just a dirty dog. I mean, I really like that I get to see so many people that I won't see otherwise. But I also feel like going to comic fests and shows turns on this like sort of like feral part of my brain that is fun but also exhausting.
Makes sense. Have you been to any since I'm asking this because it's come up a couple of times with folks, have you been to any since not that COVID's over, but people are doing stuff again.
Yeah, I have. Yeah. I think we went to SPX in whenever SPX started again after lockdown. Mm-hmm. And we went to MICE, and I've been to like smaller zine fairs, zine fests, markets. And it's weird. You can't see people's faces. I used to like work in service, and I got really used to like reading people's faces and body language and how to react to them in that way. And when I can't see someone's face, I'm like, I have no idea. I think my ability to communicate with people also, like, it didn't tank, but it also like took a hit, partly because I can't see people's faces as much.
That's a pretty common thing that I've heard. For not necessarily the faces specific part of it, but just the, it turns out being like locked inside for a few months really fucks with your ability to talk to people. another definitional question. So there's two parts. Sorry, but the definitions matter, right? Because people define them differently. So how would you define, if you think there is one, let's say, a trans community in comics?
So my thing is that the word community, I don't identify with it because it has so many meanings that to me, it almost functions as a demographic label, or like it's like, like queer community is just like a demographic that doesn't like really have any depth to it other than it's a group of people who have certain common things about them. But it's like, I don't, what is that to me? And then like the word community to me has such a like nonprofit sound to it, that is like, you use it when you want to look like whatever you're doing is like really important.
Right.
I actually read, oh, I wrote it down. Where are you, notes? It's this article called Pods and Mapping by Nia Mingus for the Bay Area Transformative Justice Collective. And the idea is that like community is like, that term is such a nebulous concept that has so many different meanings to different people, that like in writing this article, I guess the collective like talked to different people and were like, what community are you in? They'd be like, oh, I'm in the queer community. And so they'd be like, okay, who in the queer community supports you? And people would be like, or like, how does the queer community support me or support you? And they'd be like, well, I have my two friends who are also queer. And so they developed this theory of pods, which is, I hate that word. I don't know. I wish they had come up with a better word. It's just not. There are certain words that just don't sound good to me. And the idea of pods is like the people who you interact with directly who are like your support group that you go to. And that's actually part of like the way I write the community or like analyze community in Yin City too, is like part of why it's like a specific set of characters is like because they are a pod within a larger community, and maybe they overlap with each other's pods or outside pods. But so then leading back to like trans community in comics, I mean, yeah, it exists in the sense that there's like a group of trans people making comics. But in terms of like, for me, I think that there are other trans creators who I identify with and like relate to specifically who I find, yeah, who are my pods, I guess. So yeah,
that was a great answer.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bay Area Transformative Justice Collective.
Yeah, I really love their, and Mia Mingus is writing in general. I think that's a great way to frame it, because it is, I think you're right, there is like a, there's the sense of like there's a large group of people that are transgender who make comics, but that doesn't mean that we all like actually have each other's back or talk to each other in any meaningful way. Right.
Right. this is tangential, but it's also like in talking about it, I just now realized that it definitely, I think the way I'm looking at it also comes from the way I've looked at, like, what it means when you say the Black community, mm-hmm. because it's like, politics, here we go. It's like, I probably, like, I am in the Black community with, like, a Black conservative Republican, but those, that ain't my people. Like, I'm more closely, like, in certain ways aligned with, like, my white, like, weird ass anarchist psychology professor friend than I am with, like, the Black academic cis conservative person. So I think that is also where, like, why the whole, like, community versus pods thing makes more sense to me.
So then in sort of a similar vein, I'm thinking mostly, like, contemporary, but, like, we can go back as far as you want if you've written notes on this, but, like, have you noticed in general any, like, trends or particular approaches to, like, on-page depictions of transness?
What do you mean by on-page? Like,
because I'm thinking about, like, if you read a comic about, like, a trans character, right? Unless you also want to talk about, like, what you've just seen trans people doing in general, but I'm thinking about how we talked about the difference between, like, trans representation as, like, someone who is trans writing versus, like, it being about a trans character, whether the person is trans or not.
Yeah. I feel like for a while now, if a comic is about trans people and it is by a trans person, it's often, like, memoir.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is changing a bit. You know, you guys interviewed Emma Jane, and, like, I feel like I see more things like what Emma is doing, where it's about, like, trans people, but, like, not memoir. It's like, yeah, trans people doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when I see trans people represented in media by people who may not be trans, it's still kind of like on the side sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which can be really good sometimes. Sometimes, like a casual representation of a trans person, like, in something not made by a trans person is, like, delightful, actually, the way it's done. Trends. I don't know if this is a trend, but I would love for it to be a trend of more comics about trans people where they're drawn as, like, not humans. I want more furry trans comics.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Turns of trends. I don't know. I feel like it's still, like, very, like, memoir-based.
Hmm.
I think that maybe, like, publishers like Silver Sprocket are putting out things that are not memoir-based, that are, like, I don't want to use the word weird. I want more weird shit, but, like, they're putting out things that are more, like, a wider range of narrative. The note that I took for this question was more freaks, more casual. I think that's, I don't really.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Freaks, more
that's
casual.
That's my hopes.
I'm going to put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, and then to wrap up, I have one more. Well, two more, but one more actual question, which is, what is your favorite comic or any kind of media? We can get expansive about transness, just broadly.
Lately, I am obsessed with What Happens Next by Max Graves. It's a webcomic about, God, how do you even summarize this webcomic? It's a webcomic about, if I wanted to really dumb it down, I don't like that phrase. If I really wanted to oversimplify it, it's about a trans man who is, like, in his 20s or something. But when he was a teenager, he was an accessory to murder and was, like, what is the word for when people are put in, like, a psychiatric ward as punishment?
Institutionalized?
Yes. He was institutionalized for, like, his, like, entire teens, and then was, like, released into this world where, like, he was a Tumblr teen, and now he's released into this world where the landscape of like social media and online life is just completely different. And it's about him like struggling with that, but also interacting with other like chronically online trans people. It's really fucking good. It's so good. It's so good. It's one of those ones where I'm like, God, why didn't I do that? And it's because like Max Graves did it, and part of why it's so good is because he did it and not me.
Right.
It's super good. And it's like every page is just one shot, which the way that he like repeats shots but edits like very small things about them like just lands so well. Mm-hmm. It's so good. I'm like, so good. Let's see. Little Teeth, which I feel like is kind of a throwback, which like freaks me out to think about, by Jay Bearhat and Rory Francis, which is about like, it is furry queers, and it's very, I don't know if I want to use the term slice of life, but it is like interpersonal relationship snapshots of different queers. What?
Oh, no, I was agreeing with you.
Oh, yeah. Which I think it's very like Portland, or maybe not, maybe Seattle. I don't know. Whatever those places are over on the West Coast. I don't go there.
Seattle. Yeah.
Seattle. There you go. it's so good. I like, I feel like it actually inspired me to actually follow through with doing Yin City. The tones are very different, and like the presentation is very different. But the aspect of it being snapshots of these lives overlapping, I was like, oh, yeah, I want to draw that. The Prince and the Dressmaker by Jen, is it Jen Wang, I think?
Yeah.
Which I don't feel like is necessarily like overtly about, I mean, it's about, I interpret the, Prince character as being trans, or like being genderqueer or something. And so I think it is like a big part of it is him like getting to explore that, and like dealing with how that like might impact his relationship with his parents and kingdom, but also it's part of like his relationship with the dressmaker character. It's really cute. I love it. I definitely reread it pretty often. And then, okay, stay with me here. The movie Creep 2, which I don't know if either of you have seen this. So the basic like premise of it is in the first one, this videographer, an amateur videographer, responds to a Craigslist posting about like filming this guy talking about his family and his life. And so it's from the first person. And it's this, he's just like hanging out with this guy all night, but it gets like weirder and weirder. And like, as you go along, you're like, something is up with this dude. And like, spoiler, the guy is like a, some kind of murder man. But it's like really low budget. It's very short, and it's good. But Creep 2 is like even better. It's so great. The videographer character is actually, she's a YouTuber. And I was watching this movie with my friend. I was like, is she trans? And my friend was like, I don't know, but I think you're right. And like, it's never brought up in any way whatsoever. But I'm like, no, but I get this vibe. I get this vibe that this character is trans. And then I looked her up and like, the actress is not, or at least she's not out, but like, she's not trans. But like that character, I'm like, no, like the way she talks and like the way she carries herself and reacts to things. She's a trans woman, I swear. So good.
I will definitely have to watch that. Yeah, that sounds good.
I would compare it to the way that Piccolo from Dragon Ball is absolutely black.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that, except she's a trans woman.
Totally.
Okay, awesome list. Also, What Happens Next is one of my favorites. It's so good.
Oh, right. That's the Max Graves comic?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. And I mean, thank you so much. This has been a super fantastic conversation.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah,
where
we have
can...
one more question. Oh, no, we have one more.
We have so many questions.
Do we want to do?
You say goodbye first, and then you do the question.
Okay, my apologies. So, is there anything you would like? Where can people find you? Is there anything you would like to shout out?
Are you on social media?
I don't know why I'm blanking. Yeah. Lately, I am kind of trying to use Instagram more. So it's just Higoons, which is the word hi and then goons, but is one word. And then it's the same for Twitter, but it's Twitter. I feel like I'm really bad at using social media. The other day, I realized I hadn't posted anything on Instagram in like 4 months. And I was like, ooh, maybe this is why people don't remember me.
it's rough out there. It's rough out there.
And then Yin City is just at yins.city. That's the website. I have a Patreon that I'm very bad at. I'm behind. Oh, my poor patrons. They are such delightful people. They are so patient with me.
Perfect.
I'm going to be in a book. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it. I'm going to talk about it, whatever. I'm going to be in that book. I really wish I could remember the title. Becoming Who We Are?
Of course. Cool. I think we can talk about it. Didn't it come out already?
I should know.
I believe it's at TCAF, right? Like, presently.
Shit.
Like,
oh, cool.
Presently.
Perfect.
As we are speaking.
Oh, well, whenever this podcast comes out, people better have bought it. Else I'm going to be pissed.
Who is the publisher? Is it Little Brown? I think it's Little Brown, right?
No, it's... I always mess up the name. It's A Wave Blue World.
Oh.
Is that their logo is blue. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry to my publishers. I love you.
Right. Yeah, the Kickstarter was at the end of last year, too. So I think you definitely, yes.
I saw Hazel having it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So people should definitely go buy that.
Yeah.
So that's the book. This is the most hilarious plug for a book. That you illustrated someone else's story, correct? It's like a trans childhood story.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for visiting us.
Yeah. And thanks for having me.
Remus, it is now time for the final.
Now
question.
I'm allowed to do this. What have you been reading lately?
I got a few.
Ooh, yes.
I'm rereading There There by Tommy Orange.
I was just thinking that, because that whole entire premise of that book is an ethno study, like what you were talking about. I already forgot
it's
the word.
So good.
Yeah, that's like the entire, like the boundaries of that book. That's exactly what I was thinking of when you were talking. Oh, so I'm so happy you're reading it.
Oh my god, I love that book. This is vaguely related. This is only related to the book. I read it in large format print when I worked at the library, and then when I bought it to read it again, I requested large format because I am old, and they gave it to me in regular format.
What?
And that's why I haven't read it in a while, but I'm rereading it now. Like, fine, I'll read it.
The audiobook is lovely because they have different actors for the different characters, so actually the audiobook is also a great experience.
Check that out. I'm reading The Summer Hikaru Died, a manga by, I'm going to say it wrong, Moku Mokurin. Yes.
You have such great taste, Tigger.
Well, and then all of the other stuff I'm reading is just like, I had a period where I was manic, so I was just on shopgoodwill.com bidding on auctions for manga lots for shoujo manga, and so now I have to read this. I've never even heard of most of them, so that's my other thing I'm reading, is a bunch of random shoujo manga that I love. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so glad we got the chat.
Yeah. This was dope.
Thank you so much.
I want to say solidarity forever.
I know.
We get to say it.
We usually say, I mean, we can say goodbye. Yeah. Well, thank you. For,
oh, wait, no, we don't have to say goodbye.
No,
we can be
let's
here
do
all day.
It. All right. Well, thank you, Higu, for joining us. And thank you for listening to Drawing a Dialogue Presents. My name is Kathy G. Johnson.
And I'm Remus Jackson.
I'm Higu.
Solidarity forever. Let's get a clean take. Let's get a clean take, Higu. That means you say it by yourself.
Oh. Clean take? I don't do anything clean. Are you kidding me? I'm an anarchist. Solidarity forever!
Remus is the editor here, and Remus is...
Oh, that's all staying in. Are you kidding me?